Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, Andrew, I've been getting you into Me Without You, or at least getting you to listen to them. How has that been going?
Well, it's been interesting. As we sort of discussed already offline, I didn't really expect the sort of, more theatrical inflections of like sort of like a mid to late aughts December's kind of album that I heard off the few songs I listened to, or at least the ones that are their most popular on Spotify. It's been interesting to sort of see them blend those kind of influences with more of like a, you know, like a post hardcore sound. It's definitely not what I expected from a band opening for Paramore on the Parahoy Cruise, which is one of the few things that I admittedly knew about them going into this.
That's definitely weird. And they are very open with that. And we spend the first 5-10 minutes of this podcast discussing how they came to be friends with Paramore and how they came to be the only band besides Paramore to play every Paramore cruise.
Every Paramore
cruise. Everyone, all three.
I didn't realize that. Wow.
All three.
Lifers. That's quite a legacy. Now we talked about how a couple of these songs have sort of nautical themes to them. Did those sound like particularly appropriate on the Parahoy Cruise? You know, you're out to sea and they're singing about first mates and stuff.
No. I don't think any of this music particularly sounds like music you would hear on a Norwegian cruise line.
No, maybe not, but you know, it's out to sea at the very least.
It's out to sea. They talk about how they got seasick. They talk about that very openly in this podcast.
All right, well, that makes sense. There's a sort of queasy quality to some of the songs that I listened to earlier. So
there's a queasy quality to the members who speak on this podcast.
Really?
So this was my conversation with Michael Weiss, the guitarist, and drummer Ricky Mazzotta on the second day, the afternoon of the Paramore cruise, Parahoy, which sailed from Miami to the Bahamas last month. It was really fun. This is one of several interviews that I did on board. It was a blast talking to these two dudes from Me Without You about where they came from, about the Philly rock scene, about the Christian post-hardcore heavy rock scene they were adjacent to, and they really did a great job of putting it all into context and just looking back on it as the members of this band and where they're headed. And they told me about their new album, which was really exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited to listen. I'm excited to learn more about this band that did not meet my preconceptions of what they would sound like.
As I walked out the door from this interview, we were talking Sixers, specifically about the prospect of LeBron, what would happen if he joined the Sixers.
And then what do they have to say about the post-LeBron Sixers?
We were all like not super into the idea.
It's a sort of thought that's gaining steam, although we'll see. You know, they struggled against the Celtics last night. If they lose this series, I think there might be more gratitude
we'll
for the presence of LeBron.
We'll take the cheat code.
But as someone who has been very firmly in the no thanks LeBron camp, I'm glad to hear that Me Without You are on the right side of history there.
Yeah,
or the wrong side. We'll see.
Them and their producer for their new album, Will Yip, all very big Philadelphia sports fans.
Trust the process.
So Will is he's working on this new album with them, which is just about done. It's probably done by the time you hear this. They told me estimation fall for release. Label is TBA for now. Their last one came out in 2015. It was called Pale Horses, and it came out on Run for Cover Records, a really cool label. Sounds like the new one could come out on Run for Cover. It could maybe, and I'm just surmising here, could come out on Will's own label, Black Cement. That's his imprint with Atlantic. Or I'm sure there's any other number of labels that would want to put out a Me Without You record in 2018, because this album sounds like it's going to be really cool. They called it heavy. It's going to have some screaming on it, which is kind of a new frontier for them. And they've really endeared themselves to, I think, a younger generation of rock bands who really like are into what they've been about.
So if you had your druthers, where would you see Me Without You slotting in label-wise these days? What would be the best home for them?
I'd love to see more bands join up with Will's label, so something with Black Cement would be cool.
That makes sense.
These guys were on Tooth and Nail Records back in the day, and that's probably, you know, that's really what broke them. I think they would admit that from just being a band with a very small audience that made kind of difficult music to a band that still made difficult music, but had
a moderately larger audience,
because Tooth and Nail Records back in the early 2000s, they had artists like Under Oath and Norma Jean and May and Anne Berlin, some bands that had some commercial success. And Me Without You was always on the weirder end of this, but if you were really deeply into that scene of bands, like a good amount of people were, then like, you fucked with some Me Without You.
All right, well, Philadelphia represent, and God bless Me Without You, and look on their new album.
So before we jump into this, I want to say, please excuse the sound quality. It's not what it normally is on one of these episodes. This was just literally just me walking into their stateroom with a recorder and two handheld mics. So
old school, baby.
We made it work. Just picture me, Michael, and Ricky sitting in Ricky's stateroom with the balcony open, the door open, gazing at the Atlantic, talking about weird ass music and the Sixers, and playing us into my conversation. Here's a little bit of one of the hits to get you into Me Without You. This is A Sweater Poorly Knit, followed by my interview with Michael and Ricky. Enjoy.
You're a door without a key, a field without a fence. You made a holy fool of me, and I thanked you ever since. And if she comes circling back, we'll end where we begun, like two pennies on the train track, the train crushed into one. But if I'm a crown without a king, if I'm a broken open seed, if I come without a thing, then I come with all I need. No boat out in the blue, no place to rest your head. The trap I set for you seems to have caught my leg instead.
Thinking about the fan base, it is a lot of the same people who were probably around for the first cruise back with Tegan and Sarah and everyone like 5 years ago. And I mean, I'm sure some of them were familiar with Me Without You, but probably for a lot of people here on this cruise, it's just been like a succession of each year them getting more used to what you guys are about.
Like I said, they're being force-fed our band by Paramore, which is cool for us. And yeah, there's a lot of singing along, and people seem to be nodding their heads at the right part. So it felt like a synchronicity with the crowd that we don't usually get on a trip like this, being that it's so outside of our norm and our comfort zone of how we do a live show for people.
Sure.
Which is mostly just for our people that like our band is what we're doing it for. That makes it more fun, obviously, when the crowd reacts to what you're doing.
Yeah.
No, it was awesome. And we're just happy to be on this boat right now, looking out at this beautiful scenery and just getting into a different mindset and just preparing ourselves for awesomeness. Like, the winter is now gone. We're all just ready for some beautiful sunshine and just happiness and just bring it on.
So we're Parahoy 2018. Before we get too far ahead, just introduce yourselves and what you play in the band for the listeners.
My name is Mike Weiss. I play guitar.
My name is Ricky Mazzotta. I play drums, and you're listening to two-thirds of the original members of the group.
Yeah, shout out to Aaron. What's he up to right now?
Aaron, I imagine, is wandering around, maybe collecting food from the buffet that's been uneaten. That's what I think he's always doing. The pain of the food being thrown out. So he's probably like vulturing somewhere in the buffet.
His vulture game is stronger than ever.
Yeah.
The man is always trying to make sure that no food is unnecessarily disposed of. He's just like in his element, I think.
Yeah.
So he's probably off just enjoying the spoils, whereas we have to be in here just working, you know, doing podcasts for us.
Yeah, I also think he's at a place too where maybe his private life has taken a focus. So I think like pictures and interviews might be tough for him right now. I don't know. It's just speculation, of course. But yeah, he's somewhere. I don't know. He's also the only person on the trip that didn't get to bring their significant other.
Okay.
His wife is expecting their second child, and they can't bring their other child on because she's too old. But yeah, everybody got to bring their wife or spouse. One of the perks of this. But yeah, I actually don't know where he is. No idea.
You guys have a lot of obligations on the cruise going on, so I think he'll turn up.
Yes, you'll see him somewhere.
So let's start at the beginning, give listeners a little recap of how Me Without You got to this very very non-traditional but very exciting phase in the band's life of being a regular on a cruise that goes out every 2 years. How did Paramore, before even the cruise, how did Paramore first become close with Me Without You?
I think everybody has a different avenue of that. Do you remember your first encounters with them?
I remember we got asked to do some shows with them in overseas.
No, it goes way even before that. Didn't you sign like a record for
it? Oh, yeah. I wasn't directly in contact with Haley with that. Her friend asked me for an autograph of a CD, a 7-inch, sorry, vinyl. And she said, we were in Australia, and as, you know, as you do once in a while, somebody asks you to sign something. So this girl said, I have a friend, her name's Haley, could you just sign this for her? And I just wrote, you know, to Haley. I think I actually wrote something kind of normal that made sense, like for a change, because usually you just scribble something nonsense. And then a couple years later, I saw an article in Spin or AP or something with Haley Williams with that record, and it was our record that I had signed for her because she's a Me Without You fan. So turned out that was for Haley Williams of Paramore. It's kind of cool. Like I recognized it, and that was, I guess, what Rick's talking about. And I guess they just wanted to have us around for stuff, like cool little tours. And we started by getting an offer for Southeast Asia. There was 3 shows we did with them, and I met Taylor and Haley in person for the first time there. And we've just been kind of hitting it off. And yeah.
Yeah, I kind of a similar thing. Someone gave Taylor my number, and one day I just was studying for a final, and I got a text like, hey, man, you don't know me. I think it was Bender gave him my number. Right. Somehow they saw each other at Coachella or whatever. And then we just started talking for like a couple hours. We texted that day, and it was like, cool, I guess we're homies now. That's like just kind of how it went down. And it was cool that it was just like a personal a personal thing, like I want to connect with you, I'm going to find a way to connect with you kind of thing, because so often in like the music business or whatever, a lot of the things that go down are because managers and booking agents and bands don't ever really have a say. And it turns out most times if like the bands just contacted each other, a lot more things, cool things would happen, I think, rather than letting management control the action, the bands control the action. So that's kind of what they do when they have like these big, like they took us to Europe this year. It was already sold out before we were even on it. So they didn't need help. selling the venues out. So we were playing to like 15, 16,000 people in England. That's something I never thought would ever happen. Like, we're playing where like the greats played, basically. How good we did, I'm not sure. I think we did all right, but cool. Yeah. So it's all been really personal with those guys, which is a rare thing in this world. Not this world, but the microscope of the music world.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's well known that they're big fans of Me Without You. Specifically, do you know what it was that originally drew them to your music?
The awesome guitar riffs.
Yeah. The raw drums.
It just seems to be a time of, I guess, when they were, you know, just in that phase of life where you're just old enough to kind of get into cool shit.
Sure.
I guess they were, like, you know, in high school, and they just loved listening to, you know, post-hardcore or whatever, like, screamo or whatever it is that people used to refer to us as back then in, like, 05 or 04, like, when they were kind of, like, becoming...
They were like 17 or 18.
Okay,
like they had
so
to be super young.
Yeah,
even younger, maybe 15.
Yeah, like I remember being that age.
Because I was only like 26 or 20. Yeah, 25 at that time.
Yeah, but I just remember being 15, going to like my first show, like going to see Fugazi at the Troc. Shout out to Philly. Shout out to the Sixers. Trust the process. Yeah. Anyway, that was a time I think where. You just get into, like, real music that, like, sits with you for the rest of your life. Like, when you get into, like, that, in that phase of your youth.
Yeah.
I think the timing was, like, we were just a band that had put out a couple records, and they were just that was just their thing at the time. And it just stuck with them. And they've just stuck with us through the years of all the different stuff that we got ourselves into. I think they were just like, okay, like... We trust these dudes are doing cool shit, and we just want to support them. And believe me, like the feeling is mutual. I mean, we just are completely in love with their band, and what they've accomplished musically it's a rare level of artistic quality, and just everything they do. After Laughter is my favorite record they've done. I think they just keep getting better and better and better. So we love them. So it's cool, man. Parahoy.
Yeah. Yeah. We toured Nashville, like the East Coast. We were down there like 4 or 5 times a year. So if you were into like alternative music at that time, you probably saw us either with other bands or it just was a circuit we were riding.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And, like, I think there were some festivals and stuff when they first started that we got to play with them unknowingly. We didn't know who they were. I could tell you, like, a wild story about when they were playing the first time I ever heard them, but I'm not going to. I was throwing up, and it was early in the morning. That's as far as the story goes. While they were playing, so it was mildly stressful with the shakes and the sweats. That's all the story is.
I mean, that's what happens out.
You could start deducing what probably... I was going through a breakup, all right? So it led to some things that led to some things. Sorry.
I'm just staying silent. It seems like more of the
I know you want... you want. I know what you're doing. I see what you're doing. I almost... Yeah, it just was a long night. That's all.
I never really felt rough like that on the first two, but right when we first started sailing yesterday...
Oh, it was bad.
I was feeling it like a little bit like nauseous in the head, like, ooh, this is different.
I definitely threw up yesterday right when we started sound checking. I was like, the boat's moving. I can feel it. And when I was playing during the set, I would close my eyes and I could feel it even more. It was a little rough. But I wasn't seasick in said story.
I just thought I drank too much, but turns out I didn't. It was the boat.
Yeah.
What I wanted to touch on before we start talking about seasickness was I was a big fan of the Tooth and Nail bands back in the day when you guys were on the label. And it seems like with Paramore, too, that it seems like their fandom came out of you guys being a part of that scene back then. So tell me a little bit about that. Like, were they like big fans of the label, you could tell?
I don't know if they were big fans of the label. I know they definitely grew up kind of in that world where the label was like the label that you kind of got music from. I don't know. We didn't really play with too many Tooth and Nail bands aside from like the solid state bands like Norma Jean, Beloved, and then later we did some tours with Under Oath. And all three of those bands we have mad respect for because, one, they're friends. Two, they were great at what they were doing and at time and place. So it was almost like a little built-in world within the Tooth and Nail world of these bands that stuck together. Because there's a lot of Tooth and Nail bands that have come and gone that I don't know. And I wasn't that familiar with Tooth and Nail before we signed, aside from MXPX, which I grew up listening to that and going to shows. I thought that was like the punkest thing in the world when they would play punk rock show.
Oh, yeah.
But now I'm like, oh, man, that's not even really that punky. Compared to like what was going on deeper and deeper in the world of punk music. But those records definitely got me hopping as a kid. And I learned about like some other bands through MXPX, like that I probably wouldn't have ever known about. They're kind of slipping my mind now. But 90 Pound Wuss keeps coming to mind. Thanks to MXPX. But yeah. So yeah, I'm sure they were into that whole Tooth and Nail thing. It's definitely like its own world.
I think it's kind of funny because you ask about the Tooth and Nail era and all that. We kind of just dipped in and out of that whole thing with basically before being on the label, not knowing jack shit about any of that stuff. Like, we just knew that, you know, they had really good distribution and that we could get into the studio that we
got into the studio we wanted to get into with the producer we wanted to.
Yeah, and look,
what record was that? It was A to B Life. We recorded at Inner Ear in DC, which is legendary to us.
Yeah.
And they got Jay Robbins, which was like, oh my gosh, how did they manage this? He was in Jawbox.
And when we got signed to Tooth and Nail,
yeah,
they treated us excellently.
Yeah.
Is that a word? I don't know. With excellence. They were awesome to us. And we, at the time, we just hooked up with so many awesome people to be on the road with. Norma Jean was the first. Just in terms of like the whole community of bands, they were, you know, it was just a really great community to be embraced by. And once we fulfilled everything, did our four records, and then I haven't really paid attention to it since.
Yeah, that's the only reason I ask if they're still a label, because I don't know if they are at this point. But that was because we did our records.
The original question was like Paramore liking Tooth and Nail bands. I don't know. I guess they did. We just sort of, you know, got wrapped up in it, and we just didn't even know what it was enough to even.
I don't think when we recorded A to B Life that we thought we were even going to make a second record.
Nah.
Everything else was like gravy. It's like one of my dreams growing up was, I just want to tour in a band. I just want to tour the country and play some music. And this is before I even really knew these guys. Just because that's what you're fed when you're like growing up kind of in like punk music. It's like, get in the van, show flyers, let's go play gigs to 10 people. And that seemed dreamy. And then we kind of got it and just stayed with it for many years.
Many years.
Moons. Long ago.
Yeah, and I know, like, spirituality and faith were big for them and still are, and, like, it's been, like, evolving with them through their lives. And you guys and a lot of, like, the other Tooth and Nail bands all in different ways, like, put a spin on that. So I think that was another thing for them to connect with and, you know, lots of other people.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, that a lot of that's going to be Aaron's territory.
Sure.
You know, because he's the mouthpiece of the band and the lyrics. And you asked earlier about what do you think they connected with. And I think Haley probably definitely connected with Aaron.
Yeah.
I remember we played Bamboozle Fest in like 2005 in Jersey.
I was there.
Yeah. And she and Aaron did a photo shoot. It was like, and we didn't know really who they were at that point. And it was like, they picked some artists and were like, who do you want to meet and talk to? And they did like a little mini interview. But I was like, oh, that's cool. like, I don't really know these people yet, but she really connects with Aaron. It's funny because Aaron's like this hobo Willis looking guy, and she's got this bright pink hair, and I'm like, that's just a weird connection to make. But that, I think a lot of it's the lyrical content, and probably the spiritual aspect of the lyrical content is a huge connecting point for her and a lot of other people that are into the band.
Sure.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's jump forward a little bit, talking labels from Tooth and Nail. You guys put your last album out with Run for Cover. Future things coming with them? Because I saw you guys a photo with Will Yip in the studio recently.
Saw that, did you? We've recorded some new songs that we want to share with the world, and we're talking to some labels. Run for Cover is one of them, and we know something great's going to happen with it. It's just a matter of, you know, ironing out all the details. And the great news is we made the album. It's produced by Will Yip, and we're looking at making it not a double LP. That's ridiculous. But yeah, we have a lot of music and we want to just put it out. It's just you know, it's what we do. And yeah, love Run for Cover though. They did a great job with our last release, and just they get what we're doing. They support us, and how can you not, you know, appreciate that? We really do. We're excited.
Run for Cover, I think, for us, is a good bridge to a different generation almost, because they have like a lot of like Tiger's Jaw, Basement, Modern Baseball, like these bands that if they were out like 12 years ago, we probably would have toured with them to some extent. So signing to Run for Cover, it's kind of like we got like the elder status. And
sure,
they respect, again, what he said, they respect what we do. We respect the hell out of what they do. And I really think the last record coming out, Pale Horses, came out on Run for Cover, was like the best move we could have made at the time. And yeah, we finished a banger with Will Yip.
A banger.
All right. It bangs. I'm pretty hyped on it. It took a long time to make too. Like, we wrote it for like over a year. I was done my parts recording in September, and it's still not 100% done. Like, I'm going back into the studio the week we get home. So it's been this like living thing for a long time. It's not like, oh, we just recorded in 3 weeks. We've had time to be like, oh, let's make some changes and adjustments based on what we're hearing. But
it's cool because we created a lot of instrumental music, a lot, and then you just don't know until Aaron is sort of like done either A, writing his parts to it, or B, not really knowing what to do with it. And so in this stage, we're really like excited because a lot of the songs, not a lot, but like a few of these songs we didn't even think were going to be anything, are now all of a sudden becoming songs. And it has been a long process, but I think you know, sticking it out has really given Aaron an opportunity to like really revive some of these song ideas, and there's a lot of music that we have to mess with now. So yeah, we're just sort of getting into this final stages where like all the little odds and ends are getting tracked when we get home, and then I mean we get the mixes done and yeah, it's like Ricky said, it's a banger. Like it just keeps getting kind of heavier and heavier as things keep progressing with it, which I'm cool with. I'm ready for that personally.
So not a double LP, but maybe like maybe a long album is what I'm getting out of this.
Well, definitely a long album, and then maybe an additional thing that's more like we released an appendix with our last record, and that was a lot of demos and wacky ideas where whatever the second thing that might come out, it'll be more focused and have been recorded with Will as well. Yeah. But having to pick what songs go on which thing, it's been pretty apparent what we need to do. Yeah. And like you said, it's a lot of music. It covers a lot of ground. It covers like new heavy territory that I don't think we've ever been in, as far as like where Aaron's taken a scream.
Huh.
And then like instrumental territory that's like trippy, weird stuff that we would never have even dreamed of doing, because we thought we had to like stay in some kind of box, trippy in like a heavy sense and in a chill sense. It's definitely, I think, the summation of like our whole career is on this, and then some, like the extension of obviously getting better at being musicians and more confident and stuff. I think it really shines on both ends of whatever this will be when it comes out in the fall. Pre-order now.
Yeah, it's cool because we were trying to just take stock of what we've done 6 records into being a band and just try to make sure that what we do now, it can't be just something that we know is going to work and like a better and bigger version of songs that we've done before. And because a lot of stuff for me started kind of coming out, and I would just kind of get that feeling, like, this kind of just doesn't really break us into something that, you know, takes us into somewhere fresh. Because like what we wanted to do was just really focus on what we're doing now, who we are now, what we are, how we want to make music, and like just, I don't know. I think Ricky's right. It does kind of sum everything up in a way, but it also, to me, it was a chance for us to just push Aaron. Like, he didn't want to come out covering the same old kind of subjects and like even singing the way he usually does. And it's been kind of cool to see him just to kind of push himself into like some pretty heavy places. Really, really, really exciting. Because when you're a band for 16 years, 17 years, you have to do something that's relevant to what you're doing now. You can't, I don't know. I just say you shouldn't just keep trying to like recreate, because that was for Pale Horses, I really wanted to like focus on 2005 era, 2006, you know, like get back to the basics of what we do, keep things in this like sort of focus. Whereas like for this one, we just said, just don't put any of those kind of parameters on anything. And if you have an idea, let's just work on it. Let's just do it and just see what we are now. What is this band after all these years? So the result has just been a lot of material, a lot of really like extreme kind of sounding stuff, but also just a cool space where we've grown, and like we're just really happy to finally put it all together into what will be our 7th LP. Order now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think with Run for Cover, and you mentioned connecting with a younger generation of fans of this kind of music, do you think that's contributed towards wanting to just start fresh and kind of have this reinvention?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like what we created is true to who we are as individuals and musicians, to the point where I was listening with some friends recently to it really loud, and I kind of got lost in it and was like, oh man, I can't believe we made this. Like, this would be music as who I am and the music I love, I'd want to listen to. And I think that's the hope every time you create something. But yeah, as far as Run for Cover, I don't know if the youths will connect to this. I imagine like the 32-year-old who hasn't listened to like heavy music in a couple years because he's got a job and some kids or whatever, or just gave it up, will hear it and be like, oh man, like, let's break out the old records and stuff. But it's not a nostalgic trip. It's not a nostalgic trip at all. It's like pretty forward.
Yeah, none of this for me has been nostalgic.
None of this for me has been nostalgic. For me, nostalgia has just bred
that was A to B life
contempt and boredom. So I don't know who's gonna like it, like with the Run for Cover, quote unquote, like kids or whatever you want to call them. I just want to give people something that's gonna be a new sound from us that you are gonna appreciate if you like are into it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think by 40 seconds into the new record, people will be surprised. And I think that's like what you always, you want people to be like, damn, I gotta like play that back instantly. That happens pretty early in this record where you're just like, oh man, like just like the goosebumpy kind of feeling of hearing music that gets you pumped up. But we'll see. I felt like I had something to say about the Run for Cover. I can't think of it now. I'm sorry. The past.
Maybe jog the memory. You know, people speak so highly of Will and, like, working with you guys and so many important bands from this group, like Title Fight, Tiger's Jaw, Circus Survive, Anthony Green. You know, being in the studio with him and knowing him, how would you sum up what just makes him so special with working with him?
I connect with Will on a lot of levels, but the most important one for me is the style that he takes when he's working. And it's just an intense, it's a calm intensity that I connect with, because he just wants to get things, you're 100% like focused in the moment, doing, just being your best self, but like he doesn't mind the repetition. And just like in the studio, a lot of people can get burnt out trying to make music where you just are so laser focused and you just keep doing it over and over again. And he is the kind of guy that, because I love doing takes, I just love the shot, like, let's do it again, okay, let's do it, because I'm here to do this. I love getting the opportunity, maybe I'll do it better this time, I know I can do it. And he just has that style about him where he just believes in you and he knows how to really keep you in that focused place that isn't frustrated but actually just totally feeling positive and just good about doing a 40th take of something, or whatever, how many times you got to do it. I just think he and I, like, we understand each other. Just, yeah, let's just keep doing it till it sounds like we know that that's it. And he doesn't mind doing it, you know, that way.
Yeah, I think Will, there's like a lot of logical reasons why working with Will is great for us. He's a Philly guy. We have a ton of mutual friends. He loves Philly sports. Besides all the things Mike has said, there's a relaxing aspect to being 10 minutes from all of our front doors, basically, in a studio with someone who's familiar with all of our lifestyles. And like he said, like, Will just keep pushing you. You'll be like, are you sure I didn't get that take? And I'll be like, no, there's this. But he does it in a way that he's not frustrated and he's totally calm and he pumps you up. Even when you're like, dude, I don't want to do another take. He'll be like, you got this, baby. You got this. And then you're like, all right, I got this. And then by the end of that process, you're like, yo, I want to do one more. I know I can get it better. I think that's everybody that's ever worked with him. It's like the inside joke, that whole like push, keep pushing you with a smile on his face.
Sure.
And that might stress some people out, but there's something about him. He's just a cool customer. And I feel really lucky that we kind of fell into his life, or vice versa. Cause I, before we even really knew him, I wasn't that familiar with his work. I knew he worked with a Balance and Composure and some bands like that, which I'm mildly friends with those guys, but everybody we knew had great things to say about him. And the studio is awesome too.
Studio
like,
4?
Yeah. The House of Delights, like every kind of amp, every guitar. It's just a really cool historic place to be in. Have you been there?
No, I haven't. That'd be a great trip.
Oh, dude, you should set something up with him.
I should, yeah. I interviewed him when he launched his Black Cement label about like working with Tiger's Jaw and launching that whole thing. That was really, really interesting.
Cool, yeah. He's, a like I said, a great guy with a lot of great interests that go beyond music, but he's always in Studio 4. He's there, I imagine, always, like a cave dweller in the dark. Sorry, Will, if you're listening to this. Yeah, Yip's the man.
Yeah, we keep circling back to Philadelphia for good reasons. I'm interested in what it's been like to for you guys to watch this resurgence of indie rock and punk and hardcore and emo in Philly, because it seems like in the past 5 years, maybe a little bit more than that, there's been a lot more of important bands coming from there. I live in Brooklyn. I grew up in New Jersey, and I've seen how a lot of that hub of that kind of rock music has kind of shifted from Brooklyn to Philadelphia over the years. And it's kind of old news now. It's been a thing. Philadelphia has been running that for a few years now. So what is that like from you guys being veterans of being around the area? What has it been like for you guys to see that?
Yeah, I actually know a band that like moved there and now is kind of like a Philly band. Like The World Is a Beautiful Place.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They moved to Philly. It's like, oh, you guys, most of them moved to Philly. But yeah, there's a ton of great bands. One that just pops into my mind is Hopalong. Are you familiar with
them?
Sure,
they just put out a record.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy, and it's awesome. But Philly in the last couple of years definitely became like a, oh, there's all these bands coming out of Philadelphia. I think that just happens when like there's a scene small enough that people can grasp onto and want to be a part of before it just got too big. And it's been like kind of a cultivation and a hotbed of a lot of younger bands coming up quick. There's a lot I could rattle off. But it's almost like the new Brooklyn when you go to Fishtown. Are you familiar with like the different areas?
Yeah, that's where the Barbary is?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that area. Like yeah. To me, that's like mini Brooklyn light. And that happened in the last like 8 or 9 years. Just this explosion of like younger people moving to different parts of the city and doing house shows and starting labels. And it's we're never really part of like a Philly scene. Like when we first came out, we had trouble getting shows in Philly, and then like the two big shows we got in Philly, the headliners canceled the day of. So close.
It was I think we had a show at the how was it,
Pontiac Grill,
which was Dobbs Blood Brothers, and they canceled, and we were supposed to play with Bright Eyes maybe at the Rotunda or something like that, or maybe it was just
Despacito. Yeah,
Desaparecido. Yeah, extra syllable in there.
A tree called Despistado that we.
Yeah, we were just trying to get into the R5 kind of thing, whatever Sean, you know, could do for us. We were just like, oh man, if we could just get, you know, from sort of being in the suburbs where we grew up and playing shows at, you know, whatever little like crappy, you know, weird venue we could get ourselves into. Then it was like, oh man, like we just want to, like, getting in, like, to play the North Star or, like, doing 4040, which was actually one of the early R5 venues. We just sort of, we had to kind of wait until, like, even after ADB Life was recorded. We were like, on a real label, and, like, I don't know if it was because it was Tooth and Nail. We were latecomers to like, being a part of any kind of a Philly scene. And, like, all of a sudden you become a band that just tours nationally, and then Philly is just sort of, like, another show in the tour. So, I don't know. When I was growing up, it was all about the First Unitarian Church and stuff like that. So once we got to do our own show there, which was not a part of a tour, that, and it was like, actually people showed up to the show. It was like, wow, like, we are finally, like, kind of accepted here with the Philly scene. I don't know. I guess it's all the same whether or not you play the TLA or the Truck or the Electric Factory versus, like, you know, the church, but it's all the same people that are coming to see you. But I love I'm so proud of our city. I just am really, really grateful to have been around all the great music, and, like, Dr. Dog is always going to be in my heart forever as one of my favorite Philly bands. Hop Along is going to be doing amazing things. When did their new record came out?
Yesterday?
Yeah. I have not even heard it yet.
Bark Your Head Off, Dog.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's a cool title.
Yeah, they're good friends of ours, and we toured with them, and Dom lives with Francis. Dom's our new bass player. So he's always in there, but they sold out the Union Transfer like a month out.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But, like, back to your thing, like you said, there's so many bands that I don't even feel like, I feel like we're kind of watching from the outside, watching all these younger bands come up, because we don't get to play Philly that often. We can only play Philly like once or twice a year because we have to play like a big venue and we have to make sure it sells. But there's all these great shows, and I'm like, oh man, I'd love to play that with Tiger's Jaw at, like, Will Yip's party, Budweiser Fest, which that was a thing. He had like a Christmas party, and Turnstile and Tiger's Jaw played. It was pretty fun. But yeah, it's really cool to see, like, younger kids just still doing it for the rock music. You know, people want to say that guitar music's not a thing, but it is, I think.
Yeah, we're just throwing out the invitation, come to Philly. If you're a musician, you're a band, and you want to be in a cool community with great places to play, Philly is an amazing city for that.
Plus,
it doesn't hurt that we're on the precipice of an amazing sports era.
Yeah.
Go Birds.
Go Nova.
Trust the process.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, I mentioned the Elder Statesman kind of thing. Tongue in cheek, of course. But over the last, like, when I say there wasn't a scene in Philly, we weren't a part of the scene when we first came out. It was very, back then it was way more inclusive. And you had to, like, know people, and a lot of bands that just knew people got breaks. And but over the years, we've toured. I made a list recently. I think it was like 102 different bands we've toured with. Of those bands, only like 12 are active today, if that gives you any kind of scope of, like, the journeyman aspect of. And a lot of them have just, you know, either outgrown themselves or just died out or broke up. But we've, like, and if you take a look at, like, the list, we've really crossed over so many styles of music and being able to perform with so many different kinds of bands, and not just like, oh, we're doing Warped Tour every summer. Right. That's what we're doing. It's like, we've gotten, like, these crazy opportunities. Even Paramore, does it make 100% sense that we're playing with these people in, like, arenas? No. but we're somehow able to chameleon ourselves while not selling ourselves out and being fake. Right. It's just the body of work we created has transcended like one specific scene or style, I think. I think that's ultimately what I'm, or label. That's what I'm most proud of having done this for so long is that, that we can just almost play with anybody barring like Megadeth.
Which is in that world.
We actually did get offered shows with Megadeth, which we turned down. It would have been bad.
We don't feel like we're guided by like you were saying, like, you know, the Run for Cover, the label and all the awesome bands that are on that label and the fans of those bands. There's going to be people that just like, you know, what we do, and there's going to be people that don't. And we really just, for a long time now, have just sort of decided that, you know, we know somebody's going to appreciate it. It hasn't been mass numbers or anything like that, but more than anything else, I think we just sort of have sustained ourselves with the knowledge that we've made a record that excites us. It gets us talking to each other. It gets us thinking. It gets us turning up the volume when we're listening to it, and it gets us engaged in a way like, yeah, this is worth our hard work. This product, whatever you want to call it, a product, a song, an experience, whatever, like a lyric, a line, something that we've gotten to put together. It's you know, it's actually worth all the traveling and all of the heartache and being away from your family and all the sacrifices that you make. It's, you know, it comes down to like, yeah, I'm proud of this. This is something that I'm going to look back on for the rest of my life and say, you know what? It didn't go platinum, you know, a lot of people decided not to come to our show, you know, but for the people that did, for the anybody that cared, it's like we got to do this, and we're damn proud of it. We're just so happy to have had the opportunity to work with so many great producers, like not so many, but so many times we've gotten to work with a great producer, whether it's Brad Wood or Will Yip or Jay Robbins or Dan Smith or whoever. We've gotten to make music that we really believe in, and like, here we are still doing it. Like, I'm amazed. So, and just, you know, doing a podcast with you just to it right now, it's just still really cool to me. So we just want to keep sharing it with people.
So in the fall, fans can expect the new album?
I would say that's a pretty safe assumption. What it's called yet, I'm not sure, and I don't even know if I could tell you if I wanted to, but
that sounds like a nice album title right there.
Yeah, exactly.
What it's called yet, I'm not sure, and I couldn't really tell you if I wanted to.
Yeah, I don't know what my gag order is, but yeah, there'll be new music. I'm hoping for the fall more than anything. Yes, very exciting.
Anything else you guys want to throw out there?
You know, I'm not really good with these open questions. I wish like I had something more to share with the world. I don't have like a burning message. Like,
we need to have one ready to go.
Yeah, a burning message. I only care if the band sounds good when we're supposed to sound good. And then high five me, say what's up. I'll be happy to have a drink with you or whatever. But my only focus is if the band is on.
Yeah, that's it. That is the show. Hope you enjoyed that one. Thanks again to those guys for taking out time from their very fun cruise and all their activities, their seasickness to chat with me. Yeah, it was really cool because I was really into their old label, Tooth and Nail, when I was in high school, when I was just like getting really into music, kind of becoming the music fan I am now. And It was fun to look back on that with those guys. So be on the lookout for the new album. Follow them at Me Without You on all their socials. Get the updates. Follow Will Yip, their producer, on socials. He's really fun too. excited to see what they have in store for us. And I'll have more of these interviews coming your way very soon. We do this podcast, Alternative Facts, once a week, sometimes even twice a week, all different days, to make sure you get it automatically. Subscribe to the show. Search for hashtag Alternative Facts, all one word, on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, leave us some feedback. That's always super helpful. What you like, what you don't like about the show, what you want to see, artists you'd like to see on the show, and a star rating. Super helpful. Give us that star rating. And you can follow me on Twitter, at @cpainonaplane. I'm always dropping little hints about what's coming up on the show. And yeah, so until next time, thanks for listening, and I'll catch you later.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.